sex. Sava brah of your Lordship who pervade all. Sava drisha, and who are equal towards all. Avrishava, without differentiation. Svabhava, that is your characteristic. Bhaktapriya, under the circumstances, you become favorable to the devotees. Yat, because. I see you are. Kalpaturu svabhava, having the characteristic of a desire tree. Oh my Lord, your pastimes are all wonderfully performed by your inconceivable spiritual energy. And by her perverted reflection, the material energy, you have created all the universes. As the supersoul of all living entities, you are aware of everything, and therefore you are certainly equal toward everyone. Nonetheless, you favor your devotees. This is not partiality, however, for your characteristic is just like that of a desire tree, which yields everything according to one's desires. Purport by His Divine Grace. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:29, Samoham Samabhuteshu, Nave Dveshosti Na Priha, Ye Majanti Tumon Bhakya, Mai Teteshu Chapyam. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly equal towards all living entities. But a devotee who fully surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord is different from a non-devotee. In other words, everyone can take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord to enjoy equal benedictions from the Lord. But non-devotees do not do so, and therefore they suffer the consequences created by the material energy. We can understand this fact by a simple example. The king or government is equal to all citizens. Therefore, if a citizen capable of receiving special favors from the government is offered such favors, this does not mean that the government is partial. One who knows how to receive favors from the authority can receive them. But one who does not neglects these favors and does not receive them. There are two classes of men, the demons and the demigods. The demigods are fully aware of the Supreme Lord's position, and therefore they are obedient to him. But even if demons know about the supremacy of the Lord, they purposely defy his authority. Therefore the Lord makes distinctions according to the mentality of the living being. But otherwise, he is equal to everyone. Like a desire tree, the Lord fulfills the desires of one who takes shelter of him. But one who does not take shelter is distinct from the surrendered soul. One who takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is favored by the Lord, regardless of whether such a person is a demon or a demigod. Om Agyanati Virandasya Dhinandaran Sakaya Chakshura Militana Tera Tasmai Shri Parve Namaha. Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dhinamandhu Nikakmate Gopesha Gopika Kantara Arakampu Namostite Tapta Kachana Gora Gira Hare Rindavare Shari Rishimara Shade Devi Paramali Kali Kriye. So these two verses are prayers by Prahlad Maharaj, and I'm sure the acharyas could give hundreds of classes just on these two verses, because they are packed with so many beautiful references to the different Lord's activities and achievements in this material world. Prabhupada is stressing the fact that the Lord is equal to everyone. We've discussed this for quite a few days. Ye yata mam prapadyante tamstitayam vajami ha mamavat manavatate manusha patasavasaha. So Krishna says, all of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. All men follow my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. So everyone is following the program of Krishna, and according to their surrender, they're getting different results. So Krishna's accompanying everyone since time immemorial. We've been traveling around. Well, first of all, most of the spirit souls haven't come to the material world. They're still with Krishna in the spiritual sky. That's going on eternally. Now, these material worlds are created and destroyed, and they're created and destroyed again. They go on for each manifestation is 311 trillion years. It's a long time, right? 311 trillion years. 1 second of Brahma is 100,000 years. So in 1 second of Brahma, you could take a lot of births and deaths. The scriptures say we have 8,400,000 different bodies. So that may seem incredible. 8,400,000 different bodies. That would take so much time to go through that. Say each body, just for argument's sake, of course they're not, but just for argument's sake, say each body was 100 years. So within about 2 hours and 20 minutes of Lord Brahma's time, you can take 8,400,000 different 100-year bodies. So the universe is going on like that. Anyway, Krishna, when the living entity doesn't want to serve, when he becomes somehow or other, Lord Chaitanya says, somehow or other we fall into this material ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So somehow or other we come to the material world, and Krishna is so kind that he accompanies us. He accompanies us forever. He's not just looking at us from afar and checking everything out, but he's personally incarnates within the heart of every living entity as the super soul. So you're there and you're thinking, and Krishna's actually facilitating that thinking. You can't even think on your own. We can't do anything on our own. It's all Krishna's allowing it to happen. Krishna is the all-powerful, and we're the minute living entities. Anyway, we think, oh, I can move my arm, but that's not a fact, because we can see some living entities don't even have arms. Plus, some living entities become handicapped. They can't even move their arm. And we're thinking, oh, I can move my arm, but in reality, I decide I want to move my arm, and then Krishna lets me move my arm. That's his mercy that he allows us to do that. Anyway, he's accompanying us since time immemorial, and we're trying to enjoy the material world, so he's facilitating that. He's kalpa taru, he's a desire tree. He lets us have whatever we want. But you know, they always say we have to be careful what we wish for, because we might get it. So Krishna's allowing us to have whatever we want, and he's accompanying us all the time. We tend to forget. In the material world, most people completely forget. And as neophyte devotees, we're trying to remember. But the point is that Krishna's always there. Krishna's a very dynamic personality. He's a very wonderful personality. So it's like we're at this party in the material world, and it's a completely boring party. It's useless, you know. We're with these people. They're not very enlightened, enlivened, and the party really stinks. And meanwhile, Krishna's there standing next to you, and you're completely avoiding him. And he's the most dynamic personality. He knows everything. He's very beautiful. He's very strong. He's very famous. Everything. It's like, it's like the President of the United States walked in here, and we just sit down. You know, obviously, people would be impressed with the President of the United States. So how much more impressed should we be with the Supreme Personality of Godhead? But it's like we're at this party in the material world, and Krishna is standing right next to us, and we're not paying attention to him, even though he's very interesting and the party is very lousy. It's actually the material world is sort of like, well, for the devotees, it's kind of nice because we're remembering Krishna. So we don't want to, material, Prabhupada said, for a devotee, everything is happy. It's just when we're not being a devotee that things become pretty miserable. So for a devotee, the whole material world he sees is happy. But the non-devotee, or he's suffering so much. But sometimes, Mukhi was pointing out, reading a thing about intoxication, sometimes they become intoxicated so they think everything is fine. They forget their miseries. But when the intoxication wears off, they're miserable again. But even that, most people aren't quite like that. They're somewhat conscious of their situation. So Prabhupada explained that the pure devotee is fully happy, and this foolish person, the complete fool, he thinks he's happy. And everyone in between is sort of suffering, you know, they're suffering, trying to come to the proper platform. So better we try to become pure devotees of Krishna. Not that we try to become complete fools so we think we'll be happy like that. That's, you know, you have to change bodies, you have to get old, you get sick, you die. It's like a trap that Krishna has put us into, these material worlds. We can't really get out of here. It's only by Krishna's grace that we can surrender to Him and then go back to Godhead, back to home. Otherwise, you can't even get off the planet. Prabhupada said years ago, you know, you can't really leave this planet. Even if you leave it temporarily in some Sputnik, you just circle around for a while above the atmosphere, but you have to come back down because you can't live in that atmosphere. You have an earth and water body, and you live on this planet that's made of earth and water. That's your... Even the criminals in England, hundreds of years ago, the criminals in England, they sent them to Australia, and it was out in the middle of nowhere, and there was no way of getting back. You were stuck on that island. So what to speak of Krishna's material worlds? You can't walk out. You can't swim out. You're here. You have to stay here. So while you're here, you want to enjoy, you want to forget Krishna and enjoy. So you have to make up some theory. So it's really interesting, because I noted a few years ago how the younger people never heard of this theory that there's a big bang. Of course, we heard of that. But then they used to explain that there was a primordial soup. Primordial soup means, just a lot of energy. It was like soupy. Anyway, in the soup, there was these little amoebas, and they were dividing up. It was one amoeba, he became another amoeba, but he was the same, I and I. And then they divided again, and it was amoeba, 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 amoeba. Anyway, eventually, somehow or other, they got the idea, let me walk out of this primordial swamp. But they don't teach that in science anymore, right? I don't think they teach that in modern, because it's such a foolish theory that they gave up teaching it. They were looking too foolish, so they don't say that. But anyway, you'd have a picture. It was almost like our changing body picture. It had this picture where you were an amoeba, and then you walked out, you were like a frog, and then gradually you grew legs, and then you became, the last was at the end of the other page. It was a two-page picture. And at the end, you became a monkey. But they don't teach that anymore because it's too ridiculous. And also, one scientist did a study that just the eye, the amount of mutations it would take to get an eye would take millions and trillions and quadrillion years. It's more than, the guy practically was saying it would take eternity even to get one eye. So, I mean, our understanding here is explaining that Krishna creates the material, actually his energy creates the spiritual world for Leela, for pastimes. And then Mahamaya creates the material world. So Mahamaya is expansion of Krishna for creating the world, and she's unlimitedly intelligent, just like Krishna. So a person should see that the material world is created by someone with unlimited intelligence and unlimited mystic powers. Really, everything we see is the mystic power of God. We've just become used to it. We become used to it. You take a little acorn and it grows this giant tree, and we say, oh yeah, no problem there. But actually, it's pretty amazing that from a little acorn you get this tree that has you know, produces hundreds of trillions of acorns and billions of leaves. So this is all, everything we're seeing is the mystical energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But anyway, to get back to the primordial swamp, they never said, I remember I was 12 years old, and I didn't believe it. They were telling me that, and I was thinking, I mean, I wasn't into God, and you know, my family wasn't religious or anything, but I was just thinking, this don't sound right. They come walking out of the primordial swamp. But, you know, I didn't think about it too much because you're busy, you know, you're in junior high school, you're busy running around, especially as, you know, non-devotees, you're busy running around looking at the girls or whatever, and you're not really worried so much about amoebas walking out of primordial swamps. But later on, when I thought about it, I was thinking, okay, so we walk out of the primordial swamp, and we become these human beings, because out of necessity, out of our desire, we want to become human beings. So that, okay, that's fine. So why does the apple tree want to be an apple tree? Why does he walk out and want to be an apple tree? So he can feed the human beings. Why would the apple tree want to become an apple tree to feed these human beings, you know? Or why would the, I'll become a grass. Why are you becoming a grass? Human beings can't eat grass. No, I got a plan. I'll become a grass, because then the cows, somebody will, you know, some living beings will want to become cows instead of human beings, so they can also feed the human beings. So I'll eat the grass, and then the cow will eat me, and they'll give, you know, white milk, green grass, they'll give white milk, and, you know, you'll let me make the milk into curd and ghee. I mean, the whole thing is so foolish. But what else do they have to say? So now they've rejected this, but I don't know, they don't have another theory. Like maybe in the future they'll come up, they can't even come up with theories anymore because too many people know too much. So they can't put forth foolish theories anymore, so they're really stuck. They can't talk about the living being coming out in the primordial swamp, and they don't know exactly what they should say, so now they just don't talk about it. It's like one of our illustrious godmothers said this morning, that his father would always say, we're not supposed to know these things. This is their conclusion, we're not supposed to know. But I was thinking about, he said, and I didn't get a chance to tell him, I had a similar thought just yesterday, that we say we're not supposed to know. Actually, they'll say, nobody knows. The reason why they say nobody knows is because they don't know. But if you challenged them, if you said, so nobody knows, and you don't know either, they would immediately object because they think they're God. They would immediately say, nobody knows. I know a little. Nobody else knows anything, but at least I know a little. That's what the living entity is thinking. They're thinking they have a little realization, but nobody else does. So nobody knows doesn't really mean that he doesn't know. It means nobody else knows, but I kind of know. This is the mentality. So what is the benefit of the amoebas to grow into these other things just to take care of the human beings? Oh, I want to become a bean. I want to become a green bean so some human beings can eat me. Wouldn't the bean rather become a bean so he can eat some human beings? Why wouldn't that be the case? Sometimes, you know, to explain these theories in a little bit of depth, it's good. Now, of course, they will say this is simplistic. And they'll call me a fool, which is okay because I am a fool, but I try to pass on the knowledge that we get from Prabhupada and Krishna consciousness, because really we're not qualified to change much. You have to become a pure devotee of Krishna, and then you can deliver real knowledge. But Prabhupada would say stuff like, one time they were talking about human beings becoming monkeys. And Prabhupada, just, he said, so why are there still monkeys? Now, some would think that's simplistic, but actually, it's not. It's very deep. You know, why are there still monkeys? How come they didn't also? Oh, they walked out of the primordial swamp at a different time or something? Anyway. Thank you very much for coming to class. Hare Krishna. Another point here, it's a... We've been... I was thinking about mentioning it in class, and then it came up again this morning about how the only occupational duty, in Kali Yuga is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Now that's very interesting that it says that that's the only occupational duty. Because the living entities, Magna, Sumagna, Matayo, Magna, Magna, living entities are lazy, unlucky, misguided, and they have all these bad qualities in Kali Yuga. So really the only thing that you can do is, and we also read in the scriptures that the Kali Yuga is such a bad age that the demons take advantage of the Kali Yuga because they were bona fide Brahmins, then they would be good, but in the Kali Yuga you can get away with being a bogus Brahmin. So the demons take birth in Brahmin families in the Kali Yuga, and everything becomes crazy like that. So Lord Chaitanya has come, and we know that he would be chanting in the holy names, and everyone would gather and have giant kirtans, and then Maharaj Prataparudra would bring the prasadam for all the devotees. So in that way, life was going on very blissfully for the assembled devotees. And that was the main function. So Prabhupada's given us so many things to do, but it's all based on the chanting of the holy names. Everything should be, the chanting of the holy names must be there in all activities. Sometimes they say, oh, we only have to chant 16. No, Prabhupada said you chant 16 rounds on the beads and unlimited rounds off the beads. And his setup was that we would go out and chant for about 8 hours on the street in the old days. So that's at least 64 rounds. You chant 16 rounds and then 8 hours on the street, the holy names. So you chant a lot of Hare Krishna. Anyway, you're busy. If you were really concentrating, you could chant 64 rounds in about 6 hours, I think, something like that. But that would take a lot. If you do 16 rounds and it takes you 4 hours, then it would take you 16 hours to do 16 hours. That would be tough. And then if you're talking, it'll take you the rest of the day, 24 hours minimum. And you probably have some left over. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that we have to do these duties, but it's all based on otherwise all the ashrams, everything's bogus without the holy name. You say, well, I'm a grihastha, I have to support my wife. Yeah, well, maybe it ain't gonna work out. Maybe she might leave you, you know, because she sees you're not engaged in devotional service. if you come to the temple, if you don't come to the temple, sometimes I should know it. But sometimes the other partner will blame it on you. Oh, you don't come to the temple. And then if you come to the temple, they'll also blame it on you because they don't want to be there at the temple with you. So both sides, you're a loser. That's the material world. You're always the loser. There's no winning in the material world. Anyway, the point was that Prabhupada's given us so much activity and, you know, all based with the chanting of the holy names. We don't just chant the holy name, we do so many activities. Prabhupada has given us duties that will last us for millions of lifetimes here in the material world. By his grace, he may bring us back, or he may just... Look how many temples they have to build. There's so many temples to be built in every town and village, and deities. Like I was watching the... there's a beautiful kirtan on Krishna tomb. That's Krishna. The other one gets you some other site. But on Krishna tomb, they had this beautiful video of all the deities in ISKCON. It's a darshan. It's pretty much the darshan video of Radha Krishna deities. But they have a kirtan for about 35 minutes, and you see all the deities. And you think, you know, all these deities are all over the earth planet by Prabhupada's grace. It's just so fabulous. And then, you know, they're building temples. Someone was telling me they built some temple. It's 20 times the size of our temple. They just built it in India and some other... I think it was some place I didn't even hear of, maybe. And, you know, it wasn't very prominent, but there's a giant temple, and, you know, one after the next, it's just about... So, you know, if you have Lakshmi, Prabhupada can engage it completely. If you have intelligence, whatever. If you have enthusiasm, if you want to be a cook, if you want to be a pot washer, whatever. There's so many duties that Prabhupada has given us that we can barely... He said, chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. Study the Bhagavatam 24 hours a day. Go out and preach 24 hours a day. And in your spare time, cook some prasadam. Prabhupada was serious. He wasn't fooling around. So, another thing Prabhupada said, and this is a pet peeve of mine, but I'll throw it out anyway, that he said, there's so many rules, he probably said, there's so many rules and regulations. If I told you all of them, you'll faint. So we're still a preaching movement. We're trying to make new devotees. We don't want to add on rules and regulations that Prabhupada didn't even establish. What do we want, all the new people to come here to faint? We want them to be enlivened in devotion. You know, you don't want to add on. You can't even do the basics. Do the basics that Prabhupada did. Then add on some more. But, you know, the basics Prabhupada gave will take us for, you know, millions of lifetimes. And it'll be blissful. It's nice to serve. When we serve through the Prabhupada, it's very nice. Sometimes we say, oh, God, I don't want to do this service. But the second we do the service, we feel enlivened, you know? Even if you have a headache, I don't want to chant. But if you just do it, then you become enlivened. Sometimes it's so bad, but you catch up the next day then. Plus, you should know you have to catch up. Because if you know you have to catch up, you might finish them all today. If you think, well, I'm not going to chant this week. No, but then you owe 112. Then you owe 112 rounds. Oh, God. If you get in by and you owe so many rounds, you better just keep chanting. So that's the whole program. We always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Prabhupada's given us the complete program for doing that. Only a fool would think that Prabhupada hasn't given us everything. So we follow the acharyas. We don't follow fools. We have Bhakti Siddhanta wanted us to do so much for Krishna consciousness too. Let me tell a story about Bhakti Siddhanta. Everything is like coming from this Vedic literature. Like, I used to think there was this story. I'll just tell the story and then finish up. But I used to think it was the Karmi, the Christian Karmis, that their joke, you know? That the guy would say, I want to go to hell because all my friends are in hell. So I thought it was some Christian joke, you know? I want to go to hell, all my friends are in hell. Okay. But Bhakti Siddhanta tells a story how these Brahmins, he's preaching to a drunkard. So he's telling the drunkard, if you keep drinking, you're going to go to hell. And the drunkard's going, really? He says, yes, if you keep drinking, you're going to go to hell. So he says, well, what about my friends that are drinking? Yes, they will go to hell too. And he said, and the other, yes, hell too. He said, well, what about all the prostitute girls? He said, yes, they will also go to hell. All of them? He said, yes, all of them. And the guy said, boy, it sounds like a wonderful place. And the title of Bhakti Siddhanta calls it Hellish Pandemonium. Hellish Pandemonium. And they're all happy. Oh, Lord. Okay. Is there any comments or questions? Oh, Ambarish Maharaj. Primordial soup.
Yeah, primordial soup. Actually, that comes from Walt Disney.
That's Walt Disney.
Yeah, because when I was young, I saw this movie called Fantasia. And in it, there's a part of it where it starts with the amoebas and everything, and then the animals come out. And it ends with this fight between the dinosaurs. It's fabulous. I mean, it's really good. And the other comment I had was... you know, Detroit is going through a really bad time now because of the auto industry, and there's a lot of crime and unemployment and everything. So I saw on the news the other night that there's actually a plan to turn the whole city into one big farm and grow crops and have 1,000-acre farms and have domes and windmill farms and everything like that. And they're actually seriously considering that, demolishing big, huge swaths of the city and turning it into farmland. So I thought, that would be like poetic justice, you know. And the temple is right in the middle of it all, you know, so it would be really fabulous. But anyway, thanks for the nice class, Prabhupada. Too much math.
But you can, it's amazing though, you can divide down. If you take 311 trillion, listen to this, 311 trillion, 40 billion years, that's the life of Brahma. If you divide that down, you'll get 1 second is exactly 100,000 years if you divide it down. It's an amazing thing. It's like, I'm thinking, wow, Krishna is really, Krishna does it mathematically, everything like that. There, I actually had another point about the, so Walt Disney, you said, did it. So here's Walt Disney. He was wanted to live forever, but they hadn't invented enough things by then. So he had them take his head, they cut his head off and froze it. But you'll be interested in this. But because the relatives couldn't get the inheritance unless they pulled a plug on his head, they didn't know what to do. So they decided, well, we better pull the plug on his head so we can get our money, you know. This is all true stories. Is it unbelievable? You know, material world is unbelievable. How could anyone think like that? But they're all true stories. Yes?
Greenfield Village, and one of the exhibits there, they have this big glass jar, and in it is Edison's last breath, and they caught Edison's last breath and trapped it in this jar. So I don't know if he's in there or not, but anyway, I thought it was interesting when I saw it.
Funny, because they all have these things. It's mostly science fiction, but they try to bring it to reality. Because, you know, on the an old Twilight thing, they showed this guy, he wanted to stay eternal. So he put his brain into this water, and you'd see there was a monitor there, and the brain waves was like that. So they had the brain waves. So the wife was there, and he didn't like what his wife smoked or drank. So, and then she was going out with some guy. So she said, okay, I'm going out with my boyfriend now. And she takes the smoke and blows it into his brain. And the brain waves start going, So, you know, reality is stranger than fiction. And the actual reality is really unusual, but, you know, this material world, it's sort of like I was saying, it's all, I'm trying to get the kids to see how everything is Krishna's mystical, magical energy, which it is. But do we see that all the time? No. We think, oh, we're on this earth planet, everything's so stable. It's a little teeny weeny dot in this gigantic universe, and somehow or other. Oh, I forgot, that was my primordial thing, that somebody, amoeba, just decided, how did they decide to become the sun, though, and situate themselves exactly in a position in the universe that we don't burn to death or freeze to death? So the whole thing is very skeptical, you know. We should smash the scientists' ideas in a lot of ways, because that's what's holding their thinking. They're thinking that this is the way it is, and they can enjoy sense gratification, and there's nothing else. Enjoy sense gratification to that last second when you die, because, you know, you only live once. How many times have people said to you, you only live once? I remember the grandfather used to say, you only live once. Actually, that's my made-up grandfather. My father was old when he had me, so I never saw any of my grandparents. They were all dead already. Alrighty, all glory to Srila Prabhupada.